You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, hello there. Happy New Year. Welcome to the first Tech Talk Radio for 2011 and your next summer series installment. I'm Dr. Ron. Thanks for tuning in and or podcatching and or downloading and or streaming. As you're no doubt aware, Tech Talk Radio is a weekly consumer technology program intended to educate and entertain. Now, we're all off enjoying the New Year cheer, and until we return on the 14th of Feb, we're running these best ofs so that you're kept in the loop. This week, we're revisiting a favourite of ours from October 2009 when we were joined by Dr. Sally Coburn, also known as Dr. Feelgood. A real doctor, Andrew commented at the time, whatever that means. Now, many of you will know Sally from Melbourne radio station 3AW, where she's had regular spots for years talking life, health and feeling good. But unbeknownst to many, Sally is a closet tech geek, and she spoke to us candidly about early talkback radio and computers from a bygone era and internet relay chat. Also, we're going to hear a recent view from the couch where Adam Turner road tests the new Skype client for Android-powered smartphones. If you're listening live, you can join like-minded listeners in the chat, which of course is at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can also follow the panelists on Twitter, and you can participate in discussions about each and every episode on the official Tech Talk Radio forum, which of course is at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We're all tweeting, posting and madly twit-picking over the New Year break, so make sure you keep in touch with us somehow. You'll be hearing more from me later in the program, but for now, it's on with the show.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Joining us also on the panel this evening is Dr. Feelgood, Sally Coburn, who we're doing timeshare tonight. I was on her show a couple of Sundays back on 3AW. We did a bit there.
I listened to you and I watched you.
Oh, you watched the webcam.
Yeah. Was I the one? I don't know, can you see how many people are on that webcam in your studio?
Well, I can't tell.
Oh, right. We can't talk about it tonight because we haven't got ours working. JD isn't in. He'll be coming in a bit later, hopefully.
JD is running a tad behind the eight ball this evening, but he will be in. But, Sally and I, we did a bit of timeshare. We're talking cyber safety on 3AW the other night with Susan McLean, who may be listening to us this evening. Susan being she pops in here regularly and talks all about those sort of things. So, yeah, here we are. Sally's in our studio. And I was just blown away the night that we were listening on the radio or talking on the radio, and I found out that Sally is a bit of an IT guru, a junkie, a tech head, not unlike us.
She's going to fit right in tonight.
I'm loving it.
Absolutely.
So loving it.
And she's brought gadgets along. You know, she's been scouring through the handbag, and she's pulled out USB sticks, and she's pulled out
secret key rings. There's Blackberries. There's all sorts of stuff
here. And she's got a good gadget of the week for all the girls out there who might want to hear about, you know, the most amazing bit of technological gadget for the
I was going to ask you about a gadget
folk
this week. That's good. So
I don't actually have a gadget this week. I've got a website.
Going for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Too big to bring, though. It's huge.
So, it's going to be interesting. Now, the first question or first cab off the rank, Sally, are you a Mac or a PC girl?
Well, I have to admit, Andrew, that although I had extreme pressure from my father to become a Mac girl, I succumbed to the magnificent PC.
Yes. Did you?
Sorry. Oh, that's really good.
Sorry.
There'll be hisses and boos out there.
I do apologise. I know. I'm not a purist, but I just love that right click.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing with Mac, wasn't it? They had all sorts of funny things with mouses over the time, and they finally adopted it at long last. But yeah, the right click is very good. I must admit, we recently had a giveaway of pens and tablets the other day, and I was singing the virtues. I love the pen. I can't use a mouse anymore. It's all got to be right click and touch and things like that. So which would be good. But anyway, before we get into the show proper this evening, I must talk about a few little experiences during the course of the week. Dr. Ron, you probably know, but during the I've had to buy one of these things as he holds up to the webcam, which is not here at the moment.
That was going to be my suggested gadget.
It was going to be, was it?
What have you done?
Well, I've turned to the dark side purely for research purposes.
Research and development purposes, all in the name of Tech Talk Radio.
It was funny. I sent a huge email off to Adam. Well, it wasn't huge. A couple of emails. And Adam's a Mac guy, as you know, Adam Turner. And on the bottom of the thing, it said sent from my iPhone because I bought a new iPhone to play around with and evaluate. And no comment about what was in the body of the email. It was predominantly, have you bought an iPhone?
Is it one of the iPhone 3GS models?
It was one of the new 3GS iPhones. Now, basically, one of the things I wanted to do is go through the user experience at an Apple store.
Yep.
Which I did. Yep. I went up to the local one here in Doncaster over the weekend, and I had a bit of a look see. And I apart from the fact that I bumped into someone that I knew up there.
And what, working at the store
working
or
at the
a
store.
Customer?
No, working at the store, working on staff. He was wearing one of those little orange T-shirts. He said, I'm wearing an orange T-shirt. You need to speak to someone in a blue T-shirt. So anyway, he introduced me to a lovely girl in a blue T-shirt. And
this is in Melbourne, is it?
Yeah, Doncaster, just not far from
in
the studio
Apple store there. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Anyway, I went up there and I sort of said, look, this is what I want to do. And I want to be able to swap between carriers, and hence the reason for an unlocked phone, an unlocked iPhone.
Yep.
I didn't want to get one through a carrier provider, yada, yada. So the bottom line was, I said, righto, let's do this in real life. Here are two SIMs. What I want to do is put SIM 1 in, which was a Telstra SIM, and then I wanted it to actually set it all up on Telstra, which it did. It worked. You know, put it in and activated, it and it did really, really well. So fantastic. Now, let's say I wanted to move to Hutchison's 3.
Yep.
Put the Hutchison 3 SIM in. And that came up all right too.
The signal meter came up and said you had coverage.
Yep. I said, right, that's really good. Now that's telephony sorted. Let's go and try some web stuff because I knew web would be the trick question.
Yeah, the data will be the stumbling block.
This lovely girl assured me straight up and down the line that yes, this is, you don't have to do anything. You don't need anything to actually go and swap between carriers and anything like that. And I thought, okay, here we go. So I put the actual Telstra SIM back in and no web. You're good. You promised the world to deliver.
So no data connectivity.
No data connectivity whatsoever.
Off the shelf. Okay.
Yep. Put the 3 SIM back in. Bang, it all just worked again. Put the Telstra SIM back in. No, it didn't. Anyway,
did 3 work with data off the
3
shelf?
Worked with data off the shelf.
That's good to know.
Which
okay.
was good.
So what is it that Telstra requires you to do to make it work? They obviously have extra settings.
I don't know. But we ended up going to the Genius Bar. Have you heard of the Genius Bar? It's where the geniuses hang.
Yes, I have. Yep, the so-called experts.
That's it.
Yep.
So took a run into the Genius Bar and we sat down there and some Coke bottle wearing person, glass person, who, you know, a real true enthusiast, came out from behind the walls of the Genius Bar, and he said, he made a few words, one word which I can't say on radio, but he said something Telstra, and tapped and said something to do with the APN, which is the access network thing. He said, they have so many different plans or whatever, it never works anyway. So, but anyway, that was my...
Did he get it going for you?
Yeah. And he said, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to enter it each and every time when you change based on the plan that you're in. So we ended up moving across to a different sort of... anyway, it was all too hard. We had to do it manually at the end of the day. Anyway, we got over that hurdle.
Yep.
Got over that hurdle. Now comparing horses for courses in Mac land or in iPhone land and in S60 land or the phones that we traditionally have.
Mm.
One of the biggest stumbling blocks that I've found, and JD, when he gets here, we'll be able to talk to him about it,
yep.
is that like on with a PC or with any other phone, you can plug it into any device and it just talks. Like you can update your music, you can do this and you can do that. I've come to the conclusion the iPhone, it's restricted to just one device. So if you actually put iTunes on another machine at work and plug it in, it says, no, if you want to sync, I'm going to have to format everything and you lose all your applications if that's what you want to sync and all that sort of stuff. And I thought,
really? This is what I worry about. It's have to sell your soul to Apple and it just takes control of all of your contacts and your calendar and your mail and everything. But then you move the device from one computer to the next and then you have all these problems just replicate and they get worse and worse as you go along.
Anyway.
I guess if you're used to using it and you're used to Apple products and you're happy working that way and you're happy with iTunes running your life, then that's okay. But
anyway, I'm just going to...
Special guest tonight. She's got a BlackBerry here.
iPhone. And she's got Talking Cat too.
I've got a Talking Cat.
That's very cool.
I'm such a software junkie. It is incredible.
We'll have to hear from the Talking Cat later.
So, oh, yes. So, yeah, anyway, that was my Apple experience. Now, as we go on in life in the next few weeks, I'm going to do a few more comparisons and try and give some honest evaluations about it and see how it goes. But that's the initial sort of thing. But it's a lovely GUI. Very good. Oh, they do that so
I was
well.
Impressed with the GUI. I had a good play around with it on the weekend, I think, when you popped around. And I was impressed. It's comparable with the UI on the Android-powered phones. But the Android-powered phones are a little bit laggy. So what I mean by that is when you move your thumb around the screen or you scroll around or tap an icon, there's a little bit of a delay. It's not like an instantaneous movement or an instantaneous action. It's very good, but I would quite freely admit that the interface on the iPhone is better. It's a lot better. It's much more responsive. It's a very nice interface.
Mm.
So see how you go with it. Give it a run and we'll be interested. You haven't thrown away your older phone, obviously.
No. We're going to be using them both in tandem. We'll wait till JD comes in because he's got the tricks to the trade, all those sort of good things.
Very good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Dr. Feelgood. Two doctors in. I'm feeling very like I'm in the surgery this evening.
I can get my finger out.
Absolutely.
To press the enter button.
Dr. Ron, correspondence, quickly,
briefly.
I worry
when doctors say things like that.
Absolutely.
Lots of correspondence. Andrew, our discussion in episode 41 with Adam Turner and Graham about passwords. Burke says, during a recent password audit, it was found that...
A password audit? What's that?
It was found that a young lady was using the following password. Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Huey, Louie, Dewey, Donald, Goofy. When asked why such a big password, she said it had to be at least 8 characters long.
Yeah. Oh,
that's atrocious.
You're not pulling my left leg, are you, on that
no,
one?
No, that's what I got sent during the week. GD says, it's all right, I get better now. Guys, after a hardware reboot, I was able to establish a connection between my iPack and my local computer. Now, remember, GD's had problems with his iPack synchronizing before. It seems to sync everything now except for time. Prior to the hot fixes, everything was sweet. Just wondering if you guys have any problems with syncing PDAs, etc. He's probably talking about the recent daylight saving change that we encountered. GD, we haven't had any problems personally with time zones and time issues. We don't use iPacks. I don't know with the BlackBerry, Sally. How'd you go with the daylight saving change? Do you have any issues?
No, I didn't have any problems at all.
So the clock just ticked over.
Magical.
The iPhone would have been fine.
My car didn't. I was really, my microwave didn't. When are they going to tell microwaves how to do that?
Cars are very low tech. Microwaves are very low tech.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
And also, do you know the hardest part about a microwave is working out how to change the clock without frying something that's not in there? Like every time I went to change the clock, I actually just turned it on.
It's a nightmare.
It is.
It's a nightmare.
These things are sent to trials.
Needs a network. Microwaves need a network port so they can talk to an internet time server.
That would be good.
There's a thought.
If I make one of them, will you buy one?
No worries.
Okay.
I'm a gadget queen. I will buy it.
And last but not least, Matthew from Denmark says, Ron, Three have now rolled out a new network here and offer 16 megabits per second. Only in the big cities, though, you are stuck with 10 megabits per second elsewhere, and down to as low as 6 in the countryside. I'd be pretty happy with 6 megabits per second on my mobile phone.
Can I tell you,
I'm
terribly impressed because I'm sitting here actually logging on with my BlackBerry into your chat site and I just logged in.
You are not. Are you really?
That's me. That's Dr. Feelgood. That's me. I just logged in using my BlackBerry. So did you know
Fantastic.
That? Dr. Feelgood.
That's me.
Joins the studio. Isn't that great?
I'm running here. Look, hello.
Hello. Come and talk to us. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening live. If you're not listening live and you want to discuss anything we talk about on the show or send a message to any of the panelists, you can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
It's back.
We had a web-based bulletin board, Sally, and it started coughing up blood, and then it got put into an induced coma, and
someone let the smoke out of the component, something you should never do.
It moved to a better place, so we've got a new one now, a brand spanking new forum. So if you haven't re-registered, you'll need to re-register, I'm sorry, but go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Fantastic. All right, so let's get into it. Windows 7 got launched this week to a big brouhaha all around the place. Dr. Ron, you haven't managed to get hold of a copy yet. Will you be upgrading? Will you be buying and installing afresh and from new and all that sort of stuff? Have you had any thoughts on this one yet?
I would suggest that I will be buying a new PC. I'll be installing afresh on a brand new disk with a brand new installation. I was talking in the news a little bit about the pricing. We're paying a lot more. We're paying a big premium here compared with the United States.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the opening bit too.
You did.
The bottom line is I think Microsoft were having a go at getting the disks here to Australia, which I assume they produce in Singapore and their mass replication. Also, the Aussie dollar, they were complaining about that. Well, hello, it's nearly parity. It's nearly 92.93 cents at the moment. Yeah. It can't be that much more different. But you know, if you're going to go out and buy the full product, let's just talk the professional line, because that's the middle of the road one. There's one below and one above.
Which is probably what I'd be looking at. Is that what you'd recommend for me, a professional?
I think professional is good for anyone who wants to connect into domains and do some networking and stuff like that. The professional version is pretty good.
Yep.
I, once again, haven't had the privilege of looking at the home premium, so I'm not familiar with what's all in there. But to buy the professional off the shelf, you're looking at $449 for an operating system. And to upgrade it, which only upgrades from Vista, not from Windows XP, you're looking at $399. So it's only 50, what is it? It's $400 to $449. So it's only $50 less.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you got to wonder why.
Look, Microsoft were grilled about this, and they said, "Oh, look, there's lots of reasons. Currency fluctuations, but we've already blown that out of the water."
Yeah.
They also cited taxes and freight costs. the mind boggles, doesn't it?
Well, it's going from Singapore back to the United States and coming back to Australia or something. I don't know.
Anyway, and they're the key reasons, they said. Taxes, freight costs, and currency.
What about giving people an electronic download option like they do for the resellers for that?
Why are we concerning ourselves with freight costs in the 21st century when supposedly world's leading software vendor is releasing a new operating system? They should be distributing it electronically.
Anyway, it's apparently what the new wonderful version of Windows 7 does. Taskbar, it's got new changes in the taskbar.
Yep.
The go-to spot for launching applications and switching windows, the taskbar has been completely redesigned to help you work smarter, cut clutter, and get more done. I know, I must admit, I have noticed that you can actually go into documents from the taskbar, which is really quite good. The start one on the left-hand side where your programs are. They've done some really nice stuff
there.
Yeah,
the start menu.
Yep. Home group, easily share your files and printers with other Windows 7 PCs in your home. Photos and videos, Windows Live Photo Gallery, Windows Live Movie Maker, a few other standard products that come shipped with the device as well. Snap, drag an open window to your screen's border and automatically resize it. But I must admit, my favourite's the shake. Have you had a shake yet?
I haven't. So you click and you shake the window. So when the window's like in restore mode.
Well, in these big sort of screen era that we're in at the moment, big 24 inches, you can actually lose things.
Yeah.
If you have so many. Well, you just grab it on the top on the little task. What do you call it? The top bar of the thing. Give it a shake.
The title bar.
Sorry, was that Graham?
The title bar
from down the other end of the studio.
Yep.
The title bar. You give it a bit of a shake and it falls down. Everything else falls down. So you've only got this one window on the screen, not distracting you from any of the other things like your chats that go on and stuff like that on the other side. So
Graham, who's also in a chat room tonight, as well as yelling at us from down the hallway, says the inability to upgrade from XP is a good feature. Users will get a much better experience by doing a clean install. I agree, Graham, definitely.
Totally agree with that, because it just means it's going to force people to actually not put it on. Because I tried on this laptop here. I've migrated from Vista to Windows 7, and it took 2.5 hours to do the upgrade. Whereas when I did a fresh install, I blew this disk away and then reinstalled. It took me 30 minutes to put the operating system on. And it's just much more lean and mean.
Sally, what's your operating system of choice? Do you use XP at home?
Look, I use XP. I was a little bit uncomfortable to go to Vista because when it first came out, I thought too many bugs. I got my daughter's laptop on Vista and she seems to be happy with it. But Andrew has just told me that I wanted to go to Windows 7, but I can't go from XP to Windows 7. What is this? Do I have to go and buy, unless I want to completely reformat my hard drive. And frankly, with my 500 gig hard drive and it's SATA RAID, I don't really want to, I don't know how to dismantle on
that. SATA RAID.
Yeah, don't you worry about that. You know why? Because I lost my last hard drive. Never again am I going to lose everything. Ever, ever, ever. In fact, I've got a little one terabyte external drive that I do a triple double whammy backup and take it with me in my pocket.
Do you? Do you use the cloud?
I'm paranoid.
Are you in a cloud yet? Do you use the cloud?
What's a cloud?
Tell me about it, cloud. The cloud's pretty much where a lot of the manufacturers, such as the Googles and the Microsofts, have all got these things out there in the so-called cloud where you back your stuff and share and collaborate.
It's all around us. It's like the Matrix.
It is. Yeah. Just have the red pill.
But someone's
going to
hack into that and kill it, I know.
That's what, like a healthy dose of cynicism as we get stuck in.
But I do like that idea because I've got that one of those. Yeah, I bought some Western Digital external hard drives that have that same sort of virtual backup thing somewhere in the ether, but I wasn't sure where the ether was.
It's out there.
Yeah, it is.
As Mulder would say, out there somewhere. It's interesting. I think a lot of cloud-based systems these days are going to start making it very compatible for sort of backing things up. I must admit, I use it for the family photographs. Yes, I do keep them on multiple backups in home, but there's nothing as good as having something far, far away.
Now, I'd just like to say that GC on the chat site has just told me, see, I am not stupid because he's just told me that my cider may not always protect me, that I need to do backups at will. So thank you, GC. I'm glad that I'm not doing this for nothing.
Now, you've raised another good point as well, Sally. The cloud, you don't know where the cloud is. The concept is that you don't need to know. You pay for a service and the data is stored.
And if they lose it?
It's stored online. Well, this is a...
What's the insurance?
Well, that's just it. You have to assess what their backup strategies are. You have to assess how the integrity of your data is going to hold up. Are you going to trust these people? And if you look at big names, you know, and you pay some money and you have a contract with them to actually provide data hosting and storage, then, yeah, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's a better solution than what any of us could actually do at home.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, you trust the bank, don't you, to look after your jewellery in the old days.
You do.
And you wouldn't expect the bank, but it could burn down or it could get burglarised. So it's the same sort of thing. You've got to have a certain amount of trust, but I prefer to have a backup.
Think of it from the point of view that if you've got all of your data stored on your computer at home, it's all just stored on one hard disk and it's sitting in one computer in your house. But the people that you're entrusting your data to in the cloud, they might
listen
have
to this, Graham.
They might have a whole, a server room which is locked away somewhere safely and it's secure and that's got all your data on it. So if they have one or two or 10 computers suddenly fail, your data's still going to be okay.
No, I have no problem with that. I think it's one of those triple check things that if your data is that valuable, have it on the cloud, have it at home, and have one in your pocket as you're traveling.
Absolutely.
I mean, the size of these little external hard drives.
The cheapest chips, $140 will get you a terabyte nearly these days. It's pretty amazing USB wise, and you can keep them in your handbag, in your briefcase, in the car,
in
the glove box.
Hanging off your key ring.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange.
Whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Fraud-def.
Yeah, fraud-def. Yeah, exactly. Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware.
The handset formerly known as the iPhone.
Entertaining.
I don't like spam.
Informative.
There are public VPN services.
Independent.
They've run up to, 400, 500?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, this evening on the program, we have Dr. Sally Coburn, otherwise known as Dr. Feelgood, with us this evening. We're going to talk a little bit about tech and how things have gone from, well, we'll put it this way, Sally, you're currently on 3AW. Was it 6 o'clock on a Sunday night?
Correct.
And you've been doing that for a while, but my first recollections of your radio career started back in the Pillow Talk days on Austereo.
Indeed.
Was that around about 6 years, didn't it? That was pretty revolutionary radio at its time.
Look, it was naughty radio, some people thought, but in fact, if you listen to it now, you'd realise it was very tame. And you know, the most amazing thing behind the scenes, what you don't know, is that when we started out in radio, we didn't have computers because they didn't exist in radio.
Yeah, streaming didn't happen back then, and webcams didn't happen.
No, we had reel-to-reel tape that they used to have to actually cut and splice and literally sticky tape the interviews together. It was amazing. And then we got this computer.
Yeah.
So actually, they used to stick up little post-it notes on the wall to say who was the next caller. But then they got this computer, which had no hard drive and a 5.5-inch floppy. And we used to run the whole show for years, for as long as I was there, so it was 1992 to 1998, on this one computer.
What did you have the computer do when it was first introduced?
Green writing.
Yep.
On a black screen.
What was it used for
it
in the studio?
It said, Dr. Ron's on the line and he wants to talk about his itchy whatever.
Oh, it was the interface between the producers who sat outside the glass panels taking all the phone calls and who was coming up next and what they wanted to talk about. And more importantly, what button to push to put them to air, probably what line they were on. So.
Indeed, all of that stuff. Yeah. And no, look, that was revolutionary in its day. It was like, whoa.
It's just, you wouldn't even think about trying to do a program like this now or like yours now without having computer technology in the studio.
Well, I had the delight of being in the Triple M studios just the other day and, the touch screens are just magnificent, except I sort of, you know, press the wrong button, song to air.
Oh, well, that happens. It doesn't matter whether it can be more modern or not. It can be anything. You can always put the wrong song to air.
Fortunately, it didn't actually go to air.
So if you could do what you did back then today, how would you do it differently with the technology that's currently available?
Well, back then, I actually did have an MIRC chat site. I wonder if anyone's in the room at the moment remembers the old MIRC.
Yeah, Merck. That's right.
Yep. And so it was called Hash Pillow Talk, and we used to have 40, 50, 60 people. The funniest thing I found was I went on there as Dr. Feelgood, and I kept getting, you are so not Dr. Feelgood. good. You are so not. And I'm thinking, I so am.
And, so were you chatting to people live while the program was going?
Yeah, we used to have. Yeah. We had concurrently a chat site, and we also had phone in, we had chat site, we had email in, and this was in the early 1990s. That was courtesy of the fabulous Andy Grace, who really pioneered a lot of the sort of tech talk on radio.
Yep.
At Austeria, he had Net at Night, I think it was back.
Oh,
in the,
I remember that. Yeah.
That was Andy, and he of course introduced me to the internet. Wonder, I'll never forget walking out of Pillow Talk one night, and Andy was in the other room. He said, "Come and look at this," and I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's the internet." I went, "Say what?" Anyway, I went in there, and that sort of noise of the modem.
Oh, that's an analog modem dialing up.
That was it. That was it. Do you like my modem impression?
That's good.
And then often it went. It didn't.
You do that very well.
I know. Look, so many times of sitting there waiting for it to connect. Anyway, and Andy said, and I said, "That's writing on the screen." He said, "No, they're people." And I said, "Oh, come on now." And then they said hello to me. And I thought, this is stunning. It was just a revolution. It was fantastic.
It's a bit like the first time you made an international phone call, really, wasn't it? You're sort of like, wow, that was pretty impressive. And then this internet thingy came along and you go, wow, that's pretty impressive. And now we just take it for granted, don't we?
Well, I remember the very early, I can't even remember what it was called, but the Skype predecessor, and being able to sort of talk to people all over the world. And that was just so much fun.
What did we use before Skype?
There was NetMeeting
NetMeeting.
Yeah, we mucked around with for a while. Yeah,
that was an H something protocol, which was a dog of a thing to get through a firewall.
That was the predecessor to SIP, which I don't think anyone uses H.323 anymore. It was one of the first voice over IP protocols.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? So,
and ICQ, that was pretty early on as well.
I remember ICQ.
All those instant messaging applications that emerged.
Yeah. Now we have mobile phones and all of that's sort of gone, you know, as an application on our mobile phones. We're sort of really using these things now to be out in the field and interacting, you know, via email and via web. And you get a phone call these days, and you go, oh, I have to talk to somebody. Anyway, that's where it's all going to. So, Dr. Feelgood, tell me a little bit about what your other computer interests are. I noticed that you, from talking to you previously, you like to get behind the engine or get under the hood of a modern computer these days and have a tinker.
Well, also I do because, and you're going to hate this, but I actually have long-haired cats, and so I have to actually open my computer from time to time to clear out
the cat hair.
And of course, it has been known to blow out the occasional power source. And I am apt to go down to my local computer store, buy a new power source, take it home, and install it myself.
I'm impressed.
I know. Look, hey, it's a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. And
but the problem is, there's not too many girls that I know that know how to do that. So you're very much in a league of your own, I would say.
Especially for a woman over 50, would you say?
Definitely.
There you go.
Definitely.
I've got to say, the other thing I like to do is I like to unpack my or take out my little cards and put them back in various. Because I've got this really dodgy card. It's one of my video editing card, and it seems to interact with one of the other cards, and I have to keep moving it around. I don't know why. It does. It gets upset.
Dr. Ron's nodding here. Yeah.
It gets upset if it's at the bottom. It likes to be in the middle. Sort of, you know, that sounds a bit Dr.
Maybe it's a heat related issue, if that be the case.
Well, I think this is leading into a Dr. Feelgood type conversation. We want to be very careful here.
Potentially. Yes. But like changing out things like power supply units, if you use.
It's not difficult.
It's not. Well, if you use an element of common sense, you think, well, I'll just take some screws out. I'll open the box. I know. Remember what's connected to what. Okay, well, just unplug that, put the new one in.
Turn it off first.
Turn it off. That's a good idea. Use some common sense, and you'd have a lot of common sense as a doctor.
Well, this is what I think. I think people are unduly afraid of tech.
I think so.
I agree.
And I just don't get it. I mean, look, my 86-year-old aunt has gone ballistic with her computer now, and it's fantastic. And, you know, previously, I can't touch things like that, dear. But no, she's into it.
Absolutely. And it's really a bit of a false myth, isn't it? It's one of those things where people should get and learn a little bit about them. Obviously, you can do it on a PC-based system. It's a bit tricky with the Macs, but nonetheless, you can still plug the peripherals in and move them around and do stuff like that and get things talking, get like phones talking and syncing up and doing all that. It's just have a go. You can't break anything.
I'm worried that the next generation is going to actually use a computer but not understand anything about its innards. You know, they won't know what DOS was. They won't know what C prompt. I mean, it's just really sad. It's going to be it's like the microwave. I don't know how it works. I just put stuff in and press a button and it works. And the computer's going to be like that soon. They won't care.
But is that the same as us now, like we know how to drive a motor car? If you think 100 years ago, anyone who owned a motor car would have been able to pull it apart and reassemble it. They would have known every working part in it because
Wouldn't
they were mechanics and that's what they did. But now we just get in it. We start it, we drive, and we do. I don't know. It might be the same. But there's a whole generation now, like you say.
Wouldn't it be cheaper, though, if you knew how to take that car apart and build it back together?
It would be incredible. We would have all saved ourselves a lot of money. But there's a whole generation now that are growing up that have always had the internet. They've always had this connectivity, and they don't know a world without this connectivity.
Well, a lot of them, they don't actually know, you know, anything prior to Windows. They don't remember Microsoft 3.1 or anything like that. Well, that was Windows 3.1. That was Windows. What am I talking about?
But it was the first Windows.
It was. I had it. I remember when I got it, my little beige box. It was very nice.
Did you have an IBM, one of those very original IBMs when they first came out, or did you go to a Mac? I must admit, I had a Mac when I first started.
My dad had my dad had a Mac, and my earliest memory of his Mac was playing Your Restaurant at the End of the Universe on it. And what I remember was my memory tells me it was a graphics program, but it just couldn't have been a graphics program.
I think it was a text adventure.
It was a text adventure, yeah. But my head, thinking back, says it had, because I've read the book as well and seen the movie, as we all have, and I think, oh, that was I have to stop myself. No, it wasn't graphics.
And kids would be saying, a text adventure? What's a text adventure?
Yeah, boring.
Boring.
Zork.
I had Zork. I loved Zork.
Zork was a text
Zork
adventure.
Fan. Yeah.
It was, yeah, they were the interesting days, weren't they? We've come a long way from that. In fact, I don't think you'd probably find too many text adventures these days, would you?
Yeah, I don't think so, no. No, you'd type in, the computer tells you what you're seeing or what you're looking at. It says there's a troll here and your sword's glowing blue, and you type in kill troll with sword, and it says, oh, yes. Bang, crash, parry with the sword.
Yes, it did.
With the troll.
Sally, did you have a games phase?
Oh, look, I did. I still do.
What? You still do?
Yeah.
What games did you start off with?
Well, I started with that one. And, of course, my moon landing in 1971 when I had my Hewlett-Packard. I got it for my 21st birthday. I was given the Hewlett-Packard 21-step reverse polish programmable calculator with the moon landing game on it, which I played. I still have that particular machine. Don't know whether it works. Of course, you know, every girl's dream. What else did I receive for my 21st birthday? A Keilor Specialist ophthalmoscope. You too want one of those. I just know it.
A
Keilor Specialist ophthalmoscope. What is that? That is a doctor piece of equipment to look in people's eyes at the back.
Thought you were going to say something else in for a minute. That's all right.
My father gave this to me with great glee and said, Sally, this is for you for your 21st birthday. And I said, I don't want that. And Dad said, no, I'll have it. So, I had this passion for mist. I'm sorry, but I had this absolute passion for mist. Got the first one, done them all, love them. Just think that is the best ever game.
Sally, we have a question in our chat. Do you remember a Striker from IRC?
I do. I do remember Striker from IRC.
There you go, Striker. She remembers you.
Hello, Striker. How are you?
You guys are obviously acquainted.
Yeah. Look, Striker will attest to this. We had a fantastic time on the IRC. And
so how many people would come on? Like, was it?
Would have had about 30 regulars, and then there's hundreds of other people. Striker, you could probably help me here. There was gorgeous GAWJUS. There was a whole lot of people. In fact, we had, remember Striker, we had a couple of people who got married.
Really?
They met on the IRC and got married.
There you go. That's the very first internet relationship, really, isn't it?
Before Facebook.
I have to tell you, this was.
Before the Russian brides.
Well, he proposed on my show, on Pillow
Talk.
Did he?
Yep. Striker did?
No, it wasn't Striker. No, it was someone else.
Gorgeous or whoever it was.
No, it wasn't Gorgeous.
The other people.
Yeah, the other people.
Ah. I remember Myst as well, by the way.
Myst was fantastic.
Before. It was a great game. The graphics were just sensational.
I had the LucasArts one. I bought the box set of LucasArts games, which had a whole lot of stuff. But I did succumb to the Wii. I have a Wii. And I love Super Mario Galaxy. Ah, Super Mario Galaxy is brilliant.
Have you
Stop
got a
looking
Wii?
At me
you
like
need a,
that.
You need a,
I don't have any game consoles yet.
The Wii's really... You know, can I tell you what the Wii does, though, that's really, really confronting?
Breaks televisions.
You have to put your name and you have to put your weight in on the weight thing, and then it draws a little avatar of you. And mine's a really fat avatar. And then it says stuff like, you haven't been around for a while. Oh, and I've got Brain Teaser, of course, on my little green Nintendo. And Michael Kargrig, the adolescent psychologist, I caught him playing this Nintendo in an airport once. And I said, what are you doing? He said, Brain Teaser. I said, what's that? He said, keeps you smart. Oh, I'll have to have one of those. So, and he keeps saying, when you go in there to this program, he says, you haven't been here very much. What did you have for dinner? And stuff. Really confronting stuff. Then you do the Sudoku and you feel good.
It's good you go to have log onto your video game for a bit of abuse.
It's a bit that way, actually. But no, look, I think I could safely say that I got totally addicted to games. I really, really
fell
into
this. I think
we've
all been there. Dr. Ron and I used to play Warcraft. You'd sit down for half an hour and then 10 hours later, you'd still be going, oh, I've got to go to bed.
But can I tell you the thing it did for me was it taught me to touch type.
Yes.
Doing all that sort of stuff, because I don't play the war games. I like to play the sort of thinky games. And talking on the IRC and playing games, prior to that, I couldn't type.
Mm. Do you touch type, or do you touch type very fast?
Three finger touch type.
I'm sort of six finger, so three fingers on each hand. But I don't look at the keys anymore, of course.
That's good if you can get to that stage.
But I didn't mean to. It just happened.
Mm. No, my typing evolved the same way. I don't touch type, but I type very fast with both hands.
Can I tell you what really annoyed me was when I was at school, we weren't allowed to do typing if we did science. You know, this is going back in the dark ages. They wouldn't let you learn typing if you did science.
I think at our school you couldn't do typing full stop.
If you're a boy?
Yeah.
Is it wrong?
We went to a boy's school. We went to grammar school. We went to the same one.
We don't do typing. That's right. Only girls do typing.
Correct.
But hang on, only girls who do home economics do typing. They wouldn't let me do home. They said to me, you're good at science, so you have to do German. You're not allowed to do home economics. And I said, but I want to go and do the food thing so I can eat the food because they make apple crumble and they get to eat it.
Ah, that's the motivation for doing home ec. Well, there you go. I never knew. Hey, we're going to take a break when we come back. We're with Dr. Feelgood this evening. Sally Coburn, as you may or may not know, you can come and ask us questions, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, the forum's back and all that sort of stuff. Come and say good day. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
A decent Skype client is finally available for Android devices, but there's still work to be done. Skype has had a love-hate relationship with mobile devices over the last few years, such as the rise of crippled Skype Lite clients and restrictions on 3G functionality. Things seemed particularly grim when Skype ditched its Windows Mobile client, which at the time was the only Skype mobile client that offered access to all of Skype's features over Wi-Fi and mobile broadband. Skype's efforts for Nokia saw things start to turn around, yet the early Skype for iPhone client was pretty disappointing. Of course, most of the issues were due to Apple's limitations on the device. As Apple relaxed restrictions on multitasking and mobile broadband functionality, Skype responded with a respectable app for iOS 4, which scores ticks in plenty of boxes. With the iPhone sorted, Skype's developers have turned their attention back to Android, releasing an impressive Skype app for devices running Android 2.1 or higher, a limitation which unfortunately leaves a lot of Android owners in the lurch because telcos are so slow to release an official Android update for their devices. Even then, it's only officially supported for the HTC Desire and Legend, the Google Nexus One, and the Motorola Milestone, with issues reported on the Samsung Galaxy S. The Skype for Android app requires a 480 by 320 resolution display, and reportedly doesn't work on small screen Android devices such as the HTC Wildfire. I haven't had a chance to test this firsthand, but it doesn't surprise me. It's exactly the reason why I'd be very reluctant to buy one of the growing number of tiny Android phones with lowly 240 by 320 resolution displays. I decided to put Skype for Android 1.0 to the test on a stock standard Telstra issue HTC Desire running Android 2.1 Update 1, although Telstra has promised Android 2.2 will be coming to the Desire in the next few weeks. Now, I had the Desire running alongside an iPhone 4 running Skype 2.1.1. Both apps let you make and receive calls via Wi-Fi and mobile broadband, although US-based Android owners are restricted to Wi-Fi only, yet there are already reports of a workaround. Like the latest iPhone app, Skype for Android supports both Skype in and Skype out over both Wi-Fi and mobile broadband, letting you make and receive calls from traditional phone lines as well as Skype clients. The Skype Android app lacks some of the advanced features of the iPhone app, with voicemail and SMS the two you're most likely to notice. It also lacks video support, something you don't get on the iPhone either. Obviously, these might be deal breakers for some people, but they don't bother me too much, and I'm sure they'll come with future versions of the app. Different people will look for different things when testing Skype on a smartphone, but to me, the most important thing is how tightly the Skype features are integrated with the phone features. Skype for Android is an impressive first effort, but there's still work to be done. When a Skype call comes in, the Skype app rings and the screen displays the name and photo of the incoming Skype caller, along with answer and decline buttons. If you miss a call, it shows up in the Android notification bar. Tap the notification and it opens the caller's Skype contact details so you can call them back or start a chat session. Now, the iPhone behaves in a similar way. If I miss a call, I get a pop-up message plus a number appears on the Skype icon to indicate a missed call. So far, so good. But what if I'm already on a phone call on my Android phone when a Skype call comes in? I don't get an audio warning, the call is just declined and the caller gets a caller declined message. A missed call notification appears in the Android notification bar, just as if I'd missed a real phone call. If I happen to see that come up while I'm on the voice call, I can't put the phone call on hold to take the Skype call. In contrast, the iPhone's behaviour is a bit more hit and miss. If I'm on a phone call, sometimes an incoming Skype caller gets a busy message, sometimes call declined, sometimes call failed, and sometimes it just drops back to the contact list before they can even read the error message. Whatever error message they get on the other end, the iPhone doesn't alert me to the fact that I've missed an incoming Skype call. The call does appear in my Skype history, but it's not marked as a missed call, just as an incoming call. This means that the missed call number doesn't appear on the Skype icon, so I'll probably never even realise that I missed a call. Given a choice, I prefer the way Android handles the situation because Android has the advantage of that global notification bar. What if I'm on a Skype call when a voice call comes in? The Android device displays the incoming phone call details over the Skype interface, but the Skype caller isn't cut off, so I can still talk to them. I can decline the phone call and keep talking to the Skype caller. If I answer the phone call, then the Skype caller is put on hold after I've had a chance to explain to them what's happening. When I hang up the phone call, I'm asked if I want to return to the Skype call, which is still on hold. So what about the iPhone? If a phone call comes in while I'm on the iPhone, the Skype caller is immediately put on hold with no chance to explain that there's another call coming in. When I hang up the phone call, the Skype call resumes automatically. Now, once again, I prefer the way Android handles the situation as it treats the Skype caller on the other end with a little more respect than the iPhone app. Most of the differences between Skype on Android and Skype on the iPhone seem to come down to the architecture of the operating system. Apple's iOS just doesn't seem to give developers the freedom to give VoIP apps the same rights as the voice app, which is no surprise, really. Now, in comparison, the last time I tested the Nokia Skype application, it was so tightly integrated with the phone that incoming mobile callers heard an engaged signal or went to voicemail if I was on a Skype voice call. Now, considering the flexibility of Android, I expect we'll see that kind of seamless integration in future versions of Skype for Android, but I don't think Skype for iPhone will ever be able to deliver that kind of tight integration. For now, I think Skype for Android 1.0 is a pretty good start.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you want AAAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Well, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, Tech Talk Radio bringing families closer together. Really? Is that what we're doing tonight, Dr. Ron?
I've had to wrestle. No, it's not.
Sally's just done a run, huh?
I've had to wrestle my netbook off our special guest.
No.
She's run out to her car in the car park to retrieve her netbook.
It's a vital piece of equipment in this studio, isn't it?
It is. She'll be back with us in a few moments. She was trying to punch out messages on her BlackBerry. It was working, but it was a bit slow. She was getting very frustrated. She started smashing her fist against my netbook. I said, hang on a minute. That's mine.
Anyway, so she'll be back in just a moment. Yes, interesting things have been happening in the world of telecommunications this week too.
Telecommunications.
Yes. Telco should compensate complainers, says the watchdog. Because you remember how the TIO just had one of their little quarterly updates?
Yes.
Complaints are still on the rise in all sectors, predominantly for internet and mobile. Fixed lines are disappearing, apparently.
They were talking about having this legislated, potentially.
Yeah. Well, according to this, the Australian Competition and Consumer Action Network wants telcos to pay consumers $50 if their complaint of poor customer service is proven valid. Won't do a dent. I think they should go thousands. Everyone will be getting in on the act. What do you reckon? $50? Maybe just a credit to your monthly, free month or something on your bill or something. I think it'd be better. But
would $50 have suitably compensated you for your recent Telstra tale of woe?
My Telstra tale of woe? No.
No.
No, because it cost me, I paid probably $200 for something that didn't work for half a month, so it's $100. So
what about your lost productivity, having to stay at home and wait for them to come out to your house?
Well, there's a thought, isn't it?
You'd accept that you would have to stay at home and wait for them in the first instance to install the service. But if you have to take time off again and again and again for them to come back and repeatedly attend to problems that they've created,
yeah,
it's a bit rough.
Yeah. Oh, well, wait and see. Apple, yet to upgrade boot camps for Windows 7. Does that surprise you?
Yet to upgrade boot camp.
Apple has committed to upgrading its boot camp application to support Windows 7, but it's unlikely such an upgrade will be available until the hype around the Microsoft's operating system has died down and they fix their Windows, as in Apple fixed their Windows. Boot camp is a utility that lets users run Windows and its applications from a separate disk partition on an Intel-based Mac. So there you go. If you didn't quite know what boot camp was, I think, doesn't Jada use it to boot about three operating systems concurrently on his thing?
Yeah, he can have it.
Is that what boot camp does?
No, that's not different. He's using somebody on the chat helped me. He's using one of those Mackie things that everyone knows about. I can't remember.
You can't remember?
No.
Oh, well.
One of those bootloaders.
He'll be in shortly. Hopefully we can ask him. And other interesting news, the table turns for the Australian Communication and Media Authority's online safety focus. Consumers want to take responsibility for protecting themselves online, but ISPs and governments still have an educational role to play. And this is according to ACMA. This is one of their reports recently. I don't know. Is this the beginning of the turnaround for the Conroy filter? Are we starting to see, let's turn it around slowly? With the role of government in education was acknowledged, participants in this report raised concerns about an increasing encroachment of governments into their online sphere. Once again, slowly talking about bringing it into Conroy's filter.
Yep.
But others said that the government regulation in the area was too widespread and would lead to complacency and an abdication of self-responsibility.
Mm.
What do you do? It's an interesting thing. Oh, it's got to be, internet's got to be free and roaming, and education at a home base level, I think, what we've always preached in here, has to really reign supreme, don't you think?
Well, I think so. It's hard to know where the government's headed at the moment with its big net filter trials.
It's been gone very quiet.
It's been very quiet. They haven't released any results from it. The dates have been pushed back and back and back. And, yeah, I think hopefully, if we all keep our fingers crossed, it's going to die a natural death.
Yes, thought we might have heard something around the grand final time, but no.
Yeah, well, you wait until...
I haven't had any press releases from Conroy on 5 o'clock on a Friday for a while,
you wait until there's large news events in mainstream media, and by the way, we'll just slip this in, the net filter's been canned. And then, everybody watch the grand final and everyone misses all those sorts
what,
of...
What did you say, Dr.
What was that? Yeah. Welcome back to our special guest who's now net booked up, and we've got dueling...
Dueling BEPCs.
Asus EEPCs.
And by the way, they do all the nasty health press releases at exactly the same time on Christmas Eve or grand final.
Is that what they do?
Absolutely, it's the thing.
What a coincidence.
No coincidence involved, is it? All right. And other interesting news too, which we were talking about, Nokia could seek up to $1.1 billion for iPhone patent infringements. Now, this was a bit of a... Here we go. The CSIRO's just done wonders. They've got their 200 mil. That's a drop in the ocean compared to this one for the major manufacturers reproducing the technology to enable them to do wirelessly connect to one another. Nokia are going to go down the path towards Apple. And apparently Apple's facing the possibility of having to pay the world's top mobile phone maker plenty for the technology used in iPhone, or in all the iPhones sold so far.
Look, they haven't actually said the monetary value of the damages that is being sought, but it's not going to be insignificant, is it?
Well,
they're alleging head-to-head with Apple.
They're alleging 10 patent infringements, and they haven't really gone into detail about what patents have been infringed.
But they said they relate to wireless LAN and GSM radio technology and UMTS radio technology, which probably is all the 3G stuff. So
he's hoping that all the guys down at the CSIRO are listening up. They might get to go around too on the wireless. Well, but they've done their settlement on that, haven't they? So that's the end of that. So.
And all that stuff's fairly new. It's only in the last few years that Apple has delved into that. Oh, well, no, that's not true. They've had wireless in their MacBooks things for a long time, haven't they?
Absolutely.
I wonder if it's related to all of that technology or just the iPhone type technology.
Mm. Sally, why did you buy a one of those RIM devices, a BlackBerry? What made you buy a BlackBerry as opposed to any other device out there on the market?
Well, the reason I did it at the time, and I actually was just at the time that the iMac came out, and the iPhone came out, I mean, and I went with it because, frankly, I liked the compression ratio, and I liked the fact that I could get a lot of emails downloaded, and all the other programs and all the other plans I saw didn't compress the emails to the same degree. So it was actually a bit of a tech thing, and that's actually why I got it.
Yeah, okay, so it wasn't really, it was really bought because you wanted email, it was a real,
yes,
yeah.
That's why I got it.
That was really the buying criteria. Yeah. Well,
my other phone died and I needed a new phone, and I thought, well, I do a lot of travelling I do a lot of corporate speaking, so I'm around the country a lot, and so for that reason I need to be in touch, and I've just found it stunning, and I've put it onto the, it gives me the beginning of the message, but it doesn't give me the whole, I've got the option to download more, so I'd never ever reach my capacity.
And you're happy with it? Works all right where you need to use it?
I love it. I've dropped it a million times. It's got bashes all over it. No, I absolutely love it. And I must admit I've put a little bit too much media on it. And
too much media?
Can't have too much. You're talking to a man who creates media for a living. You can't have too much media.
Yeah, I know, but I can't help putting little animation videos that I make and silly things like that.
Oh, yeah, that's all the fun part of it, really.
I know, I love it.
But you don't get an iPhone. You can't do that on an iPhone.
No, but this hasn't got enough room to put as many as I'd like.
Now, you're using a BlackBerry, a 9000?
It's Bold.
Oh, beg your pardon, BlackBerry Bold. Yeah, yeah, yep. So that's a fairly recent model.
It is. It's about 12 months old, this one. I think.
And it's going great guns.
It is. Look, it's fabulous. And it's the best phone I've ever had. I love the hands-free speaker option. I mean, I've got the little suction cup thing on my windscreen that I just whack the phone in.
How's it go?
I had a Bluetooth that I used to use, but frankly, my Bluetooth, I didn't like it. And I've got a convertible, so I can't use one of those ones that you put on your... what do you call it?
The roofie
visor thingy because it flies out the top of the car.
Yep.
Excuse me. So anyway, my Bluetooth wasn't working well, so I'm just using the speakerphone on my BlackBerry, and it's working a treat.
Excellent.
Do you synchronise the BlackBerry with anything?
Look, I was synchronising it, but I love my little Outbook. What I do in Outbook is in my calendar, in my diary, I put often the emails that relate to that particular event, so I have a lot of attachments to it. That does not sync well with the battery, with the BlackBerry.
With the BlackBerry?
It doesn't like bringing across all the documents.
So you run your life off the BlackBerry, essentially?
Well, I would if I could find some way of synchronising it, and maybe someone knows the answer to this, but if I could get the dates in the calendar without all the attachments, if there's an option to say, just bring across the events, not the attachments, it'd be stunning.
Okay, so beg your pardon. So you use your Outlook and
I live
everything.
Off my Outlook.
Live off Outlook instead.
Sometimes I actually print out my calendar to take it with me, which is like really stupid.
No, it's not. I do that.
Print out the week.
Yeah, print out the week, and then you can keep that in the back of your diary, and you can see what you're doing at a glance.
But it was brilliant. It is brilliant to be able to synchronise your Outlook with the BlackBerry. As I say, it's my own fault for putting too many things in it.
It is one of those things, isn't it? The Outlook is a great thing to see because I do it all the time with my appointments. It's really handy to work out what's when and how and why. And I actually sync now with Google, so I get a text message half an hour beforehand. They send me a text to my mobile.
It's good, isn't it? Free text message reminder. Yeah, I do.
I haven't seen that one.
Haven't you?
Ooh, no.
You can Google will send you a text message reminder every half hour or whatever it is beforehand to do all that sort of stuff.
The thing I want to know from you guys, though, is with Outlook, I had problems with my previous Outlook because I am a bit of an email hoarder. I've got every email I've ever received, basically.
That's good in a lot of respects, especially if you're dealing with a lot of people.
Don't you worry about that. And the thing is, my PST file, once it gets over a gig, it gets very upset.
Yes, yes.
But now on XP, I'm finding it doesn't get so upset. I think I'm up to 1.5 gig and I must do a bit of archiving. But when I archive it...
Two gigs, the magic number, watch out.
Yeah, because the PST file doesn't get smaller when I archive.
No, when you archive, it's actually writing a backup somewhere of all that data, but it's keeping everything in your existing PST. You have to then delete the things out of the PST.
So I have to export them and call them something else and then just relink them.
Yeah, and there's also a little utility which comes with the PCs called Scan test, or I'm just trying to think what it is. I've run it a few times, and it goes through and compacts things and cleans things up and makes things a bit smaller to it as well. Scan PST or something like that, which makes things shrink down a little bit too.
A Scan PST is like a repair utility.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I have been known to use that.
Yeah. Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place. And yeah.
But you know what? I've noticed a lot of people now are using those emails where they're sending you an appointment. So do you want to come to this meeting?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Press here if you want to come.
Like an accept button, a decline button.
I don't like that because it doesn't go into my inbox. It goes into my calendar. And so I forget. I mean, okay, you could argue. But I often still search my inbox for things and I find it in my calendar. But the other day I got a reminder, came up on my BlackBerry, meeting 3 o'clock. It was 10 to 3 at the time. Meeting 3 o'clock, Carlton. I went, right.
That's handy because I'm in Frankston.
That's it. Yeah. I'd completely forgotten. So, yeah, wasn't good.
Adam Turner on our chat saying it's basically keep them around 1 gig and back them up regularly,
yeah,
which is good.
You're right.
I tend to actually break down my – I create a lot of those little files and drag and do my housekeeping. So, like, I have one for this particular show and I drag all my emails from that into one particular – and it sort of splits the load across it. So you don't have this one huge file with everything in it. You've got lots of little files. So at least you don't fall too far when things get corrupt.
But the thing that I always think too is when you
– buy a Mac, Adam. Yeah, right.
when you export the – say your inbox, you have to remember to export your outbox – sorry, your sent box as well, because you sort of have this thought, oh, it's going to back up my inbox and my sent box, but it doesn't. You have to do it all separately.
It does.
And I use my journal for a lot of –
that's going to be my next question, do you really? That's terrific.
Yeah, I put all my online receipts I put in my journal.
Good on you. That's good.
That's a good use for it, isn't it?
I used to use the journal a lot when I was in a previous job, and it was really good.
What did you use yours for?
We had, if you can picture this, we had our telephone system, our PABX, hooked up to our Microsoft Exchange. So we had some very clever integration going on. And I had it configured so that – I'm just going to do that. If anyone's actually watching on Ustream at the moment –
hello.
I started the Ustream there, so you can see Dr. Feelgood in the studio with us.
Two doctors.
Yeah, two doctors at once. I was actually able to set it up so that when my phone rang – or I made a phone call, my computer automatically opened a new journal entry straight away up on the screen. So if my phone rang, it'd say, bang, new journal entry up on the screen. Hello, it's Dr. On speaking. Oh, it's Dr. Feelgood. Hi, Dr. Feelgood. I could just start typing and making notes about the phone call. And then if you wanted to look at notes about your phone call, just go straight to the journal and you could see everything there.
What a great idea.
It's an underutilised part of Outlook.
It's really good for things like, for example, if you have a bingle in your car, go home and write the notes about the bingle. In your journal, it records the time that you record it, obviously, if you leave it too late. But it's good, actually, I suspect, and I don't know, but I suspect it would be more useful than having it on a piece of paper if you had to go to court over something.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a stopwatch feature that's built into the form so that actually if you can set it so it starts when you create a new journal entry. I can click on the start timer form. And if you're working in an industry like, especially like the legal industry where you're wanting to bill people.
They have microsecond stopwatches.
Absolutely. But you could say, if you had that integrated for your phone calls, you could say, oh, look, I spoke to that person for 8 minutes yesterday and for 25 minutes today.
Well, let me tell you, though, about the medical profession and how we've utilised these sort of things. In fact, I one of my colleagues I worked with was one of the pioneers of Medical Director, which is our software that we use for patient records. And this is fantastic. It's revolutionised medicine. We actually write legible scripts now. You've probably seen if you go to your doctor.
Is that what's right across the country now?
More or less.
They do it all basically on the computer and you want 200 a little tube of this and they dig down into it, click the button and it comes out.
But not only that, we've got the latest version, which I'm still getting my head around, has got a place to put a photograph of the patient, which you might sort of think, oh, what's that about? But A, it's a security thing to see that you really are you. But also, when you're going to the waiting room, if you haven't seen the patient for a while, you think, oh, look, I know them, but I can't remember what they look like. You can actually see the photo. It is very handy. And there's all sorts of little things on there that are just great. The recall system, that has revolutionised medicine to have recall systems integrated into the software.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
been fantastic.
Yep.
That sort of revolution, I would think, had been long coming, wouldn't it? Because traditionally, I think the medical, like probably any professional organisation, paper warfare and becoming a creature of habit in a paper world would be really hard to get everyone to go, righto, let's not
Andrew,
do it that way, let's do it this way.
I have to tell you, I'm very embarrassed to say, but in the early 90s when we first went onto computerised software and it was really basic in those days, I refused. I said, there is no way I'm doing that. I'm keeping paper records because they're the only decent thing to have and you must have paper records. And I had a sort of a conscientious objector for about a year before I got onto it, and I feel so embarrassed about it because it's fantastic.
Yeah, Yeah. And what about the national system? Are you familiar with how they're going to hook it all up? Look, is it going to happen?
I've got a lot of patients very concerned about that because they sort of, well, they're concerned that their privacy is going to be gone. I don't think it's really going to be a problem. I think it's going to make it better because if, in fact, your medical notes are available, it shouldn't be medical notes. It just should be some basic medical information, allergies, stuff like that. I don't know what they're going to do. No one really knows. It's all under wraps.
I would have thought it would have been really good to be able to, if you somehow end up in a hospital in a place where you're not anticipating to be and people go, oh, I want to see what the patient has in respect to priors, as in whether they're allergic to something or whether they've got a, I don't know, I just thought that would be really handy information for a doctor to have on hand.
I think what we'll need is two systems. I think we'll need, like, for example, in my practice, what I'd want is a system where I put my notes, but then there may be some sort of national formulated, because otherwise it's too much information, where you'd put the patient's name, maybe some of their illnesses, maybe the current medications, allergies, that you don't need everything. You just need some information, because if you have everything, it might just be too difficult.
Mm. It'd also stop a lot of abuse of the medical system and the Medicare system going on as well. You could look, say, oh, hang on a minute, you've seen three other doctors already today and you've got these prescriptions and what are you seeing me for again?
Yeah, but then you've got to start to ask yourself, is that the nanny state? And when are we, you know, are we really intruding on people's privacy? At what point do you go to that people should be allowed to do what they want to? I mean, Medicare would argue, well, while they're paying, they want to know.
Well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look at this webcam moving around. It's very impressive.
Do you Skype or any of those voiceover IP
things?
I've got
a Skype. My Skype occasion. My daughter's about to go overseas to study next year, so I fully intend to Skype.
Because Vision, that's where the pictures work really, really well.
Do you remember the Jetsons? I'm sorry, but this is the Jetsons.
I love the Jetsons.
I know, but this is the Jetsons. I mean, we always used to laugh when George Jetson would talk to Mr. Spacely on the telephone, And here it is.
Would it surprise you that Skype gained 40 million users in 3 months? That's not bad, is it?
It doesn't surprise me at all.
That's half the planet, but I would have thought, who's connected.
Doesn't it also start to make you think about your bill that you're paying for your little telephone? And you know, really, if they can do Skype the way they do Skype, why are we all paying so much for telephones?
Yes, here lies the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? Dr. Ron and I have this wonderful we're both working towards the same goal, to rid ourselves of being connected to the incumbent telco, purely for that very reason, because we're paying for things that we're not using these days.
I like paying for the bills. I like paying for the fact that they don't send me a paper bill.
Oh, that's novel, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. They make you pay for an accounting fee because they don't have to send you
a bill. Haven't been into a shop to try and pay cash, because they'll slag you for that too.
Yeah, they charge you for paying the bills as well. It doesn't matter whether you get the account electronically or not. If you're actually going to pay the bill,
you're going there with your hard-earned cash.
Because you're a customer and you have a contract with them, then they charge you to pay the bill as well. Oh, it's great. Yeah.
But where would we be without them?
Bandwidth will become free, or it's approaching, the costs are coming down for more and more bandwidth, and it's approaching that, like, zero. It'll never quite hit zero, but it's approaching it.
Well, I was in Europe last year, and I found it amazing because I took my little my Asus R2 with me, which was an interesting thing. But
you're a good advertisement for Asus.
I am actually, aren't I? I am. But the thing that I thought was, I've also got a Toshiba satellite. Don't you worry about that. But the thing that I found amazing over there, but I have no shares in any companies, and I'd love to. Free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah,
all the hotels, free Wi-Fi. But here, you know, that'll be $25.
They did that in Venice. Venice. We talked about it last week on the show. Venice, free Wi-Fi right across Venice.
Right across Paris.
Striker in our chat says, Foxtel make me pay $3 for getting a paper bill. Adam Turner, it says, it's because telcos like to do things that people that should only be discussed on late night radio shows. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Adam. So, yeah, but I think Wi-Fi has got to be a lot going for. Like, even driving here tonight, I was having a snoop around on this new device that I've got. And there's
you were driving.
No. Well, it pops up on the screen. It's hard not to notice. And it says, unsecured Wi-Fi in the area. And it's like, just drive down the street. So there's plenty of Wi-Fi to be had out there if you really want it.
Wi-Fi stealers.
Yes, war chalking, as they call it. Mm. So
it's theft. Don't do it.
It is theft, isn't it?
It is theft. Yeah. It is not.
you're not on the panel tonight, Graham. Your opinion doesn't count.
That is obviously from someone who does it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, anyway, the other interesting thing too, peer-to-peer. I'm interested in seeing if you've had any experience with the peer-to-peer sort of, obviously people associate that with downloading of movies and stuff like that, but, you know, the relevance of peer-to-peer in this day and age, have you done any peer-to-peer
LimeWire.
Stuff? Yeah.
LimeWire, yeah, is a big
one.
Yeah,
I like I actually purchased the Pro because I thought, yeah, do the right thing. I find that that fabulous. I love it. Love my music.
Because traditionally, that's where a lot of our web traffic is these days, through peer-to-peer networking. Even Canada at the moment, the main telecommunications regulator there says that they're actually going to start throttling traffic at night because they want to try and get their peer-to-peer usage down. When everyone goes off peak, everything kicks in. I think even here, one of the telcos, I'm just trying to think who it was, wasn't on it, but one of the main telcos here decided that they were going to move their off-peak hour because everyone set their peer-to-peer clients to turn on at 11 o'clock or whatever off-peak was, and they just took half the network down. So,
well, our new off-peak time with our ISP goes up to lunchtime. It's like 2 a.m. or something through to 12 p.m., I thought that's interesting, and they say that's just when it's the least used time of your part of the network.
Not bandwidth, not that sort of thing, but with peer-to-peer, I found, in fact, I nearly freaked out because on the 22nd of October, I got the message saying, you have used 80% of your this month's allocation. And I said to my daughter, don't download anything. And the thing is, I mean, she said, why, Mum? And it just, they won't cut it off. I said, no, but it'll go so slowly, I won't be able to do anything.
It's worse than being cut off.
Oh, it is.
We did it. It happened to us. We tried it once just because we wanted to see how slow it really was. And we did it about half a day before the thing kicked over into the new.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, it was like.
It's like the old days.
Like those dial-up modem noises you were making before.
Can you remember sitting there waiting for 10 minutes for a site to download?
Oh. Yeah. We did, though. And some of us still do on mobile phones.
Yes.
Oh, it's a bit like that. Now, you've obviously got a family, Sally. How do you, how are they online? Do you have to?
Well, my daughter's 20 and she's got her own laptop with her own password that I don't know.
Are they responsible for their own internet or do you provide still?
No, I provide internet. In fact, she came up to me the other day and said, so Mum, how much is Foxtel? And I told her, and how much is internet? And I said, no, I don't think you can afford to move out. because, I mean, she's got a nice laptop, but she's going overseas, so I've got to get her a small one. I figure I might get one of those little tiny ones.
The little EE things.
Gee, I mean, really, when you think about it, the price of these things, it's just phenomenal.
For $400,
I know.
You can pick up some great stuff. And I think even the Agora ones, which is by Ruslan, I can't think of his first name at the moment, who is out of Sydney, he does some pretty amazing stuff. And they're as cheap as chips, really. Mm. And it doesn't matter. They're almost becoming disposable.
I was just going to say that, yeah. I think they're wonderful.
Nothing under the hood there we can get and have a tweak, though. It's all, if it breaks, that's it. Just go and buy yourself another one. And what about the digital living room at your place? Are we seeing nice big tellies? Are we seeing...
Look, yes. I actually have I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 televisions, which is... That's basically...
And how many people in the house?
There's two.
Okay, good.
So I have two cats.
2.5 televisions per person. That's...
Yeah, but
I can relate to that.
No, but we've got the 55-inch plasma. That's for the Wii and for Amy to watch her DVDs on with her friends.
Yep.
And then there's the old Telefunken. I've got this old Telefunken television, 85 centimetres across from the early 90s. That is a genuine Telefunken. I'm going to tell you, the picture on that is brilliant. But I've got my Optus IQ. Got to have my Optus IQ. Got to watch 45 episodes of SVU one after the other.
Optus IQ? I thought it was Foxtel. Is it Foxtel IQ?
Sorry, it's Foxtel IQ. Where am I saying?
I was about to say Optus. Same programming now, though.
Oh, no, Optus do own... Optus have a Foxtel. I don't know which... I actually can't remember which carrier I'm with because I keep changing.
Were you originally with Optus and then suddenly you're getting... That's like my mum and dad, they're the same.
I went Telstra and
suddenly, they got an IQ and they're getting all this Foxtel badged stuff. And I said, when did you become Foxtel customers? I don't think we are. I think we're Optus or whatever.
But I get... You know what? I'd love to know if anyone on the chat site has this problem. You can't turn the magazine off. You ask them not to send you the magazine and they won't. They keep sending it. And you say, I don't want to receive the magazine because I go online and I program it. No, you have to get the magazine.
And they bill you for it.
Probably.
Yep. Do they? I'll be built in.
But don't you just love the fact that you can be anywhere in the world and you can program your IQ and program it to record the whole series?
That's good. That's a good feature.
Oh, I love it.
That's very
good. Until they start screwing around with the times and in the electronic program guide, then you're absolutely, you miss the last bit, the imperative bit. Just before he's about to do something, it stops.
You know how on Google Books there's that thing about looking for the pages with the hands? You know about that?
Vaguely.
Yeah. Well, I found one once.
Did you?
I found a hand page. But it's a bit like I think people should look at the information, the programming information on the television, you know, press the I button to look at on Foxtel, because I don't know who writes the stuff on these shows, but some of it is way off. It is the wrong – it's just everything's wrong. Quite frequently.
It's a frequently discussed and debated topic in here, I've got to tell you.
Oh, really? Some of the stuff they say, it's terrible. Mm.
It is. It can be very misleading, I think, in a lot of respects. And yes. Anyway, take a break.
But we love it.
We'll come back with more after this.
Talk Radio.
You going to get an iPad?
Definitely, yeah.
Might take a while, though.
Are you planning on buying an iPad?
My husband is.
You use Apple products at the moment?
Yes, I am. I have an iPod Touch, so...
What Apple products do you use at the moment?
I've got the Apple Mac. The kids have got the iTouch.
Is it going to replace your iPod Touch, or will you use it for other things?
It will probably replace my iPod Touch, but I like the fact that you can use like the Word programs and stuff, so it'd be cool doing homework on it.
What's it going to do that your existing technology won't do?
I think it will replace the computers and the laptops because it's more portable, easy to take places. So, yeah.
What do you think the iPad will do that your existing technology doesn't do?
I'm going overseas in 2 weeks, so something like that. I've got an old MacBook that's about 4 years old, so as far as space and weight and ease, it's just amazing.
Do you think that this would replace your MacBook for when you're travelling?
I would think so. I didn't originally, but I think it probably would. So, yeah, yeah.
What sort of model are you going to get, do you reckon?
The 3G one.
What model are you going to get?
I think a 3G.
And you get a Wi-Fi and a 3G option?
I would, because then if you're getting that option, then you are replacing the MacBook, I guess, that hopefully when I get home blows up or something and I'll have to come and get one tomorrow. That is amazing. Oh, my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You have to get one now.
I just think the whole size thing is just amazing. As in everything that's on that.
I know.
No, it does actually look more than like a normal screen. It actually looks 3D-ish.
Closer, doesn't it?
Yeah. That is sensational. Wow.
Now let's set the time and place. Adam Turner, our in-house aficionado of the modern-day digital living room, has just left Sydney's Apple Store after the Australian launch of the iPad. Adam sipped from the Kool-Aid, knelt at the altar of jobs, and just published an article for The Age Tech entitled Fear and Loathing in the Apple Store. I had a quick chat with Adam to gauge his 2-in-1 store opening and iPad release experience. Fear and loathing in the Apple Store. What was the experience like? Tell us.
Like I said, it's a religious thing. You've never been to a store opening where they chant, Bondi, 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 and they clap. You walk in and they clap and cheer, and it's like a revival meeting. It's like, come in, brother, let us preach the good word to you. And it wasn't even the worst one. I think the chatty one that I went to last year, the year before, was maybe a few more people. There weren't as many people there today because I think the queues at the George Street Temple in the middle of Sydney were around the block.
The George Street Temple, I like that, yeah.
So I think more people went to the George Street Temple than to the Bondi store because that's a new store. But it's full on, and they I think they just get paid. I think they have electrodes taped to certain parts of their body, and if they stop clapping or cheering or smiling, they get zipped.
Yeah, just to remind them to start cheering and clapping again. Well, it would have been doubly exciting, I suppose, because you've got not only the release of the iPad, but you've also got the opening of a brand new store in Bondi today.
See, they do that at a store opening anyway, but then to have the iPad as well was like the double whammy. And they form the line of honour to welcome you in and then shepherd them up, and you've got the big queue running along the side to get your iPad, and then everyone gets their personal introduction where you sit down with someone who registers it for you, because if you bought a 3G one, it's a little bit like buying an iPhone with a SIM card. You've got to activate it and all that kind of stuff. And you're welcomed into the fold.
You're accepted into the house of Apple. How many people do you reckon were queued up there? Like, we saw some photographs and it looked like there were maybe only 15 or 20 people out into the street, but were they a bit deceptive, those photographs? Or?
I reckon where I was at Bondi Junction, there was maybe 50, maybe, by the time the door actually opened. But there was also about 30 journalists, which was pretty funny. And we were on opposite sides of the door. Like, all these journalists on one side with cameras and microphones and everything pointed all these people on the other side waiting to go through this big glass door. But George Street, I think, would have had hundreds. It was around the block.
Oh, really? So there were that many at the in the city store in Sydney?
Because when I got in the taxi on the way to Bondi, I said to the taxi driver what I'm doing. He's like, oh, that's what's going on in George Street. I was there this morning.
Yeah. Andrew and I went to the Chadston store last night, and we were largely underwhelmed by the attendance there. They pretty much pulled down the shutters at 9 p.m. when they closed the store. We were expecting to see a big line of people queued up with their sleeping bags ready to go, but there was no one there. Like you said, there was a number of journos and some photographers there, and there was us, but there was no one there really queued up waiting for the doors to open.
The thing is, if you're queuing up, you're only doing it for the glory and for bragging rights, because if you ordered one, it would have arrived today by courier anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Lid ordered my one in California, and it arrived on the day they went on sale there. And then she just walked down the street to FedEx and sent it straight to me. That was much faster and easier than her queuing up on the day and hoping to get one. She's really serious. You pre-order one, but you then can't say, oh, I was in the line. I was there, you know. And for Apple fans, that's part of the experience, you know. It's to go to the temple, to stand at the altar, to hand over your money, you know, it's all part of the Apple experience.
So, Adam, as you said in your article there in your couch, far be it from you to criticise another person's religion, but I take it you haven't been converted by this experience today?
No, no. I ran into the guy who, the sandal-wearing evangelist, I haven't named him, but he knows who he is. And he's like, we're going to convert you. And it's like, no, you're not. We'll use it, but I'm not an Apple fanboy. And all that kind of stuff just makes it even, just puts me off even more. Anything that people get fanatical about, I get suspicious about. Maybe it's just a journalist.
I saw a funny comparison, a chart that somebody had done comparing a rock from 10,000 years BC with one of Apple's new iPads, and it had, has either of them got a USB port? No. Can you plug your SD card into either of them? No. The Apple, in the to its advantage, it did have a touch screen, I think, which the Rock didn't have. But I think as the dust settles over the next few months, people are going to start to say, well, look, it's a nice device and it's got a good user interface and, you know, it's very usable, but doesn't do this, doesn't do that. It falls short of basic things which my netbook or my laptop can do.
That's the thing. You've got to find a good use for it. And when I was at the store this morning before they handed over my 3G review unit, they ran through a few apps that I'd already installed on it, and a lot of them were newspaper and magazine apps, which I've just been starting to take a look at anyway. Some of them were really impressive. You look at some of them, you think, yeah, I can see how that would appeal to people, and that's one of the things I want to do, like with my Sydney Morning Herald blog, and I've already tried to do a bit, is get beyond the just, is it a good gadget or not, but look at what would you do with it, because I think that's how you'll love an iPad if you've got a good use for it.
Yeah, yep.
Thinking it's going to replace your netbook, you're probably going to be disappointed with it.
Adam, the proof of the pudding, or the proof of the evangelical wafer, is going to be in the eating, I think, over the next few months, isn't it?
I think so. I think you've just got to find that killer application for it, whether it be looking at photos or reading magazines or whatever. If you can find something to do which it does better than anything else you own, then you will love it.
Well, I just want to have a look at a program guide or whatever.
Yeah. An iPad sitting on the coffee table could be perfect from. I reckon the coffee table and the bedside table are the two places where an iPad makes the most sense. Unless you're looking for commuting and stuff, but then the screen glare on it's pretty bad in sunlight. It's worse than far worse than an iPad.
Yep.
If you're lucky, if you want to read books on the go, you're far better off with a Kindle or Borders new Kobo reader. They're surprisingly good and cheaper than a Kindle. Yeah, you've got to decide what you want to do with it.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio. Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Humdinger.
Rip Schnorder.
It's a Perla Terra.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Oh, yeah, but we've never had a stark raving loony party.
Does Flash's ability to charge for content make it an even greater threat to Apple and the iPad?
You don't win elections, you lose them.
But it's great. That's outside Australia.
And allegedly, they're going to open the new Bondi store on the day of the launch of the iPad.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
Arabic has become the first non-Latin language to hit the internet.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
Horror, shock, frustration, disdain, and disgust.
See, there's some things you just got to do on a netbook, I think.
Netbooks aren't better at anything.
Apparently.
You told me to dress up. You said it was a formal occasion.
I'm not sure what you would download.
And I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time, because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
And there's an LED backlight.
Independent.
Okay, now let's get a sense of perspective about this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No, the couch is unbelievable.
Is it? Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Joining me this evening on the panel are two doctors. A real one and a not so real one.
Sally's a real one as well.
Yes,
oh, there you go.
There you go.
I paid a lot of money for mine. I went to buyadoctorateonline.com or whatever it is. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't, just made that up. Don't type it in.
Ah, yeah, good. One of those spam mail things. You're the one, aren't
you? Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Joining us, obviously, is Dr. Sally
or Dr. Feelgood, Sally Coburn. Now, your show on 3AW, what do you just talk? You don't talk tech there, do you?
Talk health.
You talk health and bodies and souls and all sorts of
things. Talk all sorts of health information, and I usually have an expert or two or three in every week. And, of course, when you came on, we were talking about cyber safety.
Yep.
But on the show last Sunday, we did. It was interesting because radio is a fascinating place because there's still some stuff that people think, oh, you shouldn't talk about that on radio. But I don't believe that. I think we should. And so I did a show on the consequences of prostate cancer. But it became very techie because I needed to have a warning. And, of course, to get a voiceover guy in to do the warning, that costs money. So we just downloaded a whole lot of stuff from the net, and it was fun.
It's a great resource. And then putting it all together with all the modern tools and gadgets we've got at our disposal.
You know, I had this quote from The Simpsons, a quote from American Pie, and a whole lot of computer type voices, and it was a fun morning.
It's also a big time waster too. Time you sit down there and find them all and stitch them all together,
but I have
WaveLab. Like
I use WaveLab, which is just fabulous.
And that's tell us about WaveLab. I must admit, I haven't heard of that one before.
WaveLab is one that actually the tech guys at 3AW recommended to me.
Yeah.
And it's like SoundBlaster. Not SoundBlaster. What am I talking about? SoundForge. It's very similar to SoundForge, which are the two SoundForge and WaveLab are the two almost professional editing equipment.
Yep.
Really good.
Very good. Now, talk to me a little bit. We've spoke off air before about genealogy and things like that, what you do in your spare time tech-wise and things like that. So obviously genealogy is one of the things because we've been down that with our family, but you've done it with yours as well.
Look, I love genealogy, and I'm a member online of ancestry.com.au. If you're interested in family history, ancestry.com.au is fantastic, and I've been subscribing to that for many years.
Mm.
And I've traced my family back to the 1700s using that stuff. At the moment, they've just put up the electoral rolls from 1900 to 1954 in Australia. You know, you can trace your family back, you can find out where they lived, what they did, who they were living with. Oh, it's very interesting.
Which ships they came out
to. You can find that out too. A lot of that's free, actually. In fact, can I tell you too?
Yeah.
Births, deaths and marriages in Victoria, you can go there and if you go to a public library and look in one of the genealogy software indexes where you can look up your ancestors and you can get the registration number from the index. You can go online to the Births, Deaths and Marriages, pay about $17.50, and you can get a PDF emailed to you of their death certificate, birth certificate, marriage certificate.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Look, it is, but only the historical ones, if you want to get more recent.
Oh, current one, a real person.
Can't get a real person, to get dead people. But up to 1985, though, deaths up to 1985.
Yeah.
So, and I would say from a family health perspective, I've had a few patients come in and say, I really don't know what dad or granddad died of. They've been able to get the death certificate, found out they died of bowel cancer, go on and have the tests. It really makes a difference.
That's good, isn't it? There's a positive coming out of some of this genealogy and technology joining all together. It's going to be great in a few years' time, isn't it?
And, of course, I think it's familysearch.org is the fabulous website where it's free. It's got a lot of the transcribed parish registers put up there by the Mormons. Fabulous work they've done. Brilliant work.
Any other great pastimes on the net that you do?
Love on the net.
Yeah, well, you gave me one of these things to go and Google before.
I did my own website, but as was pointed out by Warlock Online, that it hasn't been updated for quite some time.
March 2008.
Well, 2008. Yeah, I just got a bit busy. But the 3AW, we put our podcasts up of the show on 3AW, but I did that website using expressions, and prior to that I used FrontPage. So, it was pretty, I believe it's got a lot of excess HTML behind it, but hey.
Now, one thing I was going to ask you too, with all the do-it-yourself medical sort of things which are becoming online, because the internet's becoming a real resource for, every ill, scratch, itch, whatever you might happen to have, is that doing more harm than good, or is it good because people can research and then come and see a GP and say, oh, look, I think.
Can I tell you one of the greatest things I find is I will have a patient there, and one today I remember she had a sore shoulder, and I said, right, look, I can show you what muscle that is. I went to Google Images and I put in trapezius. Bing, up come all these fantastic diagrams. I can say, see that? That's what's wrong with you. I can also, I often say to patients, let's go and talk to Dr. Google. And so we go online. And of course, another time I bring up Wikipedia and they go, but that's Wikipedia. I go, yeah, but see, I know how to use it, and I have a look there first, and then we'll go and look somewhere else.
Yep.
Look, I think it's fabulous. I think the trouble, of course, being that unless you know where to go for good information on health, you're going to find yourself scared witless by some of the stuff you're going to see.
Yep.
So some of the stuff that, of course, Better Health Channel that the state government puts up is a really good start in Victoria. But, of course, and anyone from overseas can go there too. Most countries, and in fact, some of the American government websites are fantastic. The CDC website over there is brilliant. So, yeah, look, I think it's a good thing overall.
Okay. So we're sort of starting to see, I know that my wife in particular, if the kids get something that she doesn't know what it is, she'll hit the internet straight away and go and try and research it. And
then they've all got leukemia.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always this fatal. That's so true, isn't it?
I know.
But where do you start? I wouldn't even know where to start doing
see,
that.
That's why as a doctor I'd prefer people to, you know, okay, do that, but please come and talk to me before you instigate any treatment.
I'm probably like a typical Australian, you know, 30-something-year-old male where I just say, oh, go to a doctor once every 4 or 5 years, maybe something. If I'm on my deathbed and I can't breathe and there's blood getting coughed up, and
yeah, bad,
then I might consider going to the doctor.
I would like to see you consider having your cholesterol tested when you're, you know, sort of 30, and just know what you're in for. Talk about your risk factors.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, some of this stuff that's up there now. For example, talking about prostate, just
very topical at the moment.
It
isn't
is. It's because Movember's coming up.
Oh, glad you've brought that up.
Movember.
Do tell.
You've got to grow a mo. You're going to raise
you
money.
In?
I think you're in.
A Tech Talk team.
Okay. Tech Talk team.
Tech Talk team for Movember.
Okay. Yep. Grow.
I did
a
it a couple of years ago. Remember, Mark Diggins had a go at me.
And he did. Yes.
And you raise money for Prostate Cancer Foundation and also for Beyond Blue, the depression group.
Yeah.
And really worth doing. But what I love about this is it's men's health is being brought out into the open, something you just don't usually talk about.
Yes,
but now
listen up, you boys out there, because predominantly boys, I'd say, be listening. But, yeah, didn't they bring the prostate cancer check down? It used to be 50, and now they're recommending 45 to now 40,
look,
I think, isn't it?
That's a very controversial area, which I could launch into if you want me to, but I think that's a whole nother show.
Different radio show, yeah.
That's a whole nother show. But the sort of thing is I tend to take the attitude of it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't, but you should discuss with your doctor. Just don't go and blindly have a test. Talk to your doctor about what it means, how to do it, and whether you should.
Okay, very good. All right, back to technology then.
Back to tech.
So what are you going to do in the next little bit? You're happy with the BlackBerry?
Happy with the BlackBerry.
You haven't been tempted to the dark side or anything else? No,
I love it.
Have you played with an Apple iPhone?
Nope.
You haven't?
Don't want to.
Do you want to?
No.
Do you want to touch one? Do you want to just have a look at one from a distance?
No.
Okay.
No. I like
She sounds like I used
but,
to be.
But I bought a. Can I tell you about the absolutely fabulous piece of equipment that I bought 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, is this a gadget?
This is a gadget. Oh, we're not up to gadget yet?
No, we won't talk about gadget. We might wait for the gadget, but yeah.
No, we'll wait for the gadget. That was just a teaser.
Yeah.
That was a teaser for the
exactly.
gadget.
Exactly. Yeah, all right. Now, as I was going to say, any new tech? What's on the wish list? Have you got, obviously, you've got enough televisions. The Blu-ray, have you gone down the Blu-ray side of things
now,
yet?
Now, that is the next thing, but I'm waiting for them to come down in price, as everybody is. Can't see the point until it is. And also, you know, people go and buy these Blu-ray players, but they don't have a Blu-ray recorder. So they sort of, it's silly. And you'll convert a DVD into Blu-ray. What a waste
of time. Doesn't work.
What a waste of time. So until you've got the whole scheme, either you're going to get the Blu-ray disc to put in there, or you're going to have the Blu-ray recorder to make them, why bother having a Blu-ray?
Mm.
So I'm waiting.
It's a valid point. Yeah.
Like
they're
Adam said a few
days.
Years ago, it's like the first guy that ever owned a fax machine.
Who was
going
well, to fax?
This is pretty good. Now what do I do?
John, I am so over people saying to me, what's your fax number? I said, I threw out my fax machine
about 10 years ago.
I don't have a fax. Don't talk to me about
fax. I think we should
fax
have an international fax destruction day. I think you've
totally
got Movember. We just get rid of these things.
Don't need them. PDF,
so
email.
Pleased to hear you say that. Electronic is the way to go, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Like, easy storage. Everything is neat and tidy. Mm. Mind you, I use more paper than I ever did.
We seem to,
it's
don't we?
It's funny
the
paperless world never really became paperless, didn't it? We're still all very green and not.
Right.
We print out. And even, I love the way people put on the bottom of their emails, please consider this email before printing or whatever it is that they put on there. And you go, yeah, right, sure. When
Do you find that sometimes you print emails and the actual body of the email is on page one, but then there's page 2, 3, and 4 with this information might
exactly.
be protected, and yeah, please consider the environment you're printing this out. And
but I always have my computer, and there here you are. My printer is always, of default, is a duplex. So it will always print the other side. So
yep.
I always have page 1 and 2.
That's there good.
Saving
That's very
paper.
Good. So you're using half the paper that everyone
That's
else is.
Correct.
That's good. I don't know how when people email me, it's amazing. They always just put that extra line, whatever it is, on the bottom of the email, which causes it to go to two pages.
That's someone's law. We could call it Andrew's law.
It could. But in solution to that, I just grab it out and stick it back on top of the printer on the other side.
Excuse me. I have got a world-shattering piece of news. This has never happened to anyone I know ever before. My daughter's computer decided to arc up the other day and die, and I said, did you check the warranty? She goes, oh, no, but it'll still be in warranty. I said, nothing's ever in warranty when it dies. It's still in warranty.
Is it really?
Her computer died in warranty. Thank you very much. Has anyone ever had that experience?
Is that an out-of-the-box warranty or an extended warranty that she purchased?
It was out-of-the-box warranty.
That's pretty rare.
Oh.
That's good, yeah.
Except it might be the battery, and I doubt that they'll cover the battery.
I don't know. They were very nice.
They were very nice, and I'm going to go back there. But it's never happened to me before. The other thing is I lost the charger to my video camera. Rule number one, if you lose a charger to your video camera, you will go to the store and buy a new one, and when you come home, you will find the old one. But I went to the store, and they didn't have it in stock, came home, and found it.
It's a bit like your wallet. When you lose your wallet and you go and replace everything and tell everyone, then you find it.
Exactly.
like losing the TV remote control. If you lose that, you might as well just throw out the TV and buy a new one, because it's going to charge you through the nose to replace the remote.
Oh, well, you can go and buy these all-in-one things.
The universal remotes.
They're pretty good.
Don't you need to program them with the original one, though? Or?
No, not these days. I know that the Logitech ones, the whiz bang, Adam will know what they are. The ones that you push one button and the TV comes on.
The curtains close.
Oh, that's the ones.
Yeah.
You plug them into your laptop via USB and you program them online. It says what appliances do you have, and it then puts all the codes down straight off your USB into your remote control, so you don't have to do what you say. Which theoretically is really good until you lose your login, like I have with mine. It's all too hard.
So you can't log into your remote control anymore.
I can't log into my remote.
The world's gone
sad,
mad.
Isn't it? Has it? Really?
This is crazy.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We might go to our final break for the show this evening. We've got Dr. Ron and Sally Coburn in this evening talking all sorts of things tech at the moment. You might remember Sally. If you go, who's that voice? Where's she from? Pillow Talk back in the 90s, wasn't it? 92, 93?
Think bedtime, Sunday night. 92 to 98.
Think the 6 years.
Think the Walkman in your ears.
That's Walkman.
Walkman in your ears.
Andrew and I were saying last week we used to be, well, not Andrew and I together, but independently, we'd be driving home and we'd sit out in the driveway of our house and we'd be listening to to your program, and we'd say, we can't go in yet, but
people
still on.
Absolutely.
I get on planes and airline flight attendants and say to me, I hate you because I can never get home because I sit there listening to the next caller.
But doesn't it go to show how relevant it was at the time to everyone's lifestyle?
And can I say, I absolutely promise to you, it was all absolutely genuine. Those callers were just as they came, and I've never, we had to switch the call taking off and then flick it on at 10. Bing! It was completely full and it stayed full the whole time.
Isn't that amazing? We've never done talkback radio in here.
No, thank goodness.
It's fun. I love talking about it.
All right, we'll trundle down the road to 3AW and do it down there. All right. Hey, thank you. Oh, yes, off you go.
We have a small presentation to make. Dr. Feelgood, Sally, thank you very much for coming in. You've got your very own Tech Talk Radio coffee mug now.
I love that.
Thank you very much for being our guest tonight.
Thank you so much.
For having you in here.
We've done our timeshare. We'll go back to 3AW next time. We'll do it again another.
And it's been fabulous to see all the people in the chat side, and I'm still talking to them.
There you go. Well, once again, thank you very much, Sally, for coming in and joining us this evening. It's been wonderful.
My pleasure.
I love having we don't normally get too many girls in here talking about tech.
That are so passionate about the hobby.
What is it about?
We're hanging out with the wrong crowd,
what's
obviously.
What's with my sisters?
Absolutely. Hey, thank you very much for coming in. Thanks,
my pleasure.
Everyone. Thanks for everyone for contributing on the chat tonight, too. It's been a wonderful night tonight. We're going to do the same next week. We've been chatting to all sorts of people. Kelly from, I'll talk about it next
Microsoft?
Time. Not Microsoft, from an image company. We're going to talk about how to search for images and stuff like that online.
Terrific.
Anyway. Once again, we'll be back same time next week. So it's until then, bye for now.
Hey, Andrew's got it in one. We will be back this time next week. We hope you've enjoyed the first Tech Talk for 2011 and this summer series instalment. We're airing these best ofs over the New Year break until our return to the studio live on Monday the 14th of Feb. Don't forget you can keep in touch with us via the forum, via email, and of course via Twitter. Now, don't forget to tune in next week when we'll have the next summer series highlights package ready for your digestion. I'll catch you again next week, same time, same channel. Bye for now. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena van der Venter. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner, and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week.
Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.